Maine, Maine, Maine Outdoors. From Rangeley to Eastport, Fort Kent to Kittery, the Maine Outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife, and the woods are just outside your doorway. So get outside and find it in the Maine Outdoors. Fishing, hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine Outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your Outdoors Hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors.
And if you would like to call in, our number here is 1-800-966-1039, 1-800-966-1039, if you have any questions or comments, anything you want to talk about. All right, Dana, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Dana.
Hey, good evening, Jim.
How is your world?
Oh, it's starting to get busy.
Now, from what I understand, you were able to spend some weekend at the Augusta Sportsman Show.
Yes, I spent the entire weekend there, starting Friday, Friday afternoon. Show opened at 1, and we wrapped up at 4 o'clock today.
Oh, there. That was a good full weekend. Pretty good turnout,
yeah,
huh?
It was impressive. Saturday in particular was like around just before noon. I've never seen so many people at the Civic Center. It was great.
Well, and
to be back there.
Yeah, and having been to a lot of sportsman shows, I'm sure like yourself, you know that when the weather's nice, turnout is good because it's still not quite, you don't have to really mow your lawn, and for the most part, it's too wet to still get out there. It's muddy. So there wasn't a lot of raking going on and yard work. So everybody's looking forward to getting out and doing the hunting. I mean, doing the fishing and hunting, turkey hunting and so forth. So, yeah, good. I'm glad that they had a great turnout.
To kick off to the spring, you know. And Saturday we did have inclement weather. So, you know, that probably led to a few more people instead of being out enjoying the weather. But even today was very busy, and it's just great to see all the people getting out.
Okay, good. Well, Dana, let's kind of give everybody a little bit of background on what your current positions are and what you're doing, and maybe some of the things that you've done in your past that have gotten you to where you are today.
Oh, sure. So, I mean, you know, whatever you do with your life, it leads you to where you are today, right? You know, so I've done a lot of different things. I've got a variety of experience. I grew up in Orno, Maine, went to University of Maine, moved to Greenville, was a raft guide, got all my guide's licenses when I lived in Greenville. And at the time, you know, if you got your hunting, fishing, recreation, you were a master guide. So at 23 years old, I got all my guide's license in one test, one oral board. So I've held that license since then. And when fall came around and hunting season wound down, I decided to go back to school. So I went to University of Maine School of Law. Got a law degree, and followed that up with working for the Maine Department of Environmental Protection. And I'll back up. But summers, while I was in school, I worked for the Atlantic Sea Run Salmon Commission, and I was privileged to work on all the rivers down east and work with Atlantic salmon. I got to see a lot of the state that I otherwise wouldn't have gotten to. So then I worked for Maine DEP, starting out doing licensing and permitting work, and did environmental assessment work, and also did enforcement work for the Maine DEP.
So suffice to say, you have a well-rounded, you work also with the electric company at Bangor Hydro?
Yep, I worked at Bangor Hydro when I was in school. And then after I finished my degrees, and working at Maine DEP, I went to work for an engineering firm in Augusta. And I worked as a wildlife biologist, and also doing permitting and compliance work. So, you know, my dad was a professor at UMaine, and he was always an advocate for getting as much education as you could. And I'm telling you, you know, the time I spent in law school, even though I never practiced law, it's been invaluable.
Mm-hmm.
And all the work I've done,
and it continues
to today.
And it's ironic that when you had talked about the Atlantic Sea Run Commission that you worked with out in Narragansett River project, we just heard Bill's and had quite a coalition of people testifying to try to, if I can tell the listeners, the state is divided in a north zone and a south zone when it comes to bass fishing. And the south zone starts over in Washington County and comes over to Hancock County, Waldo County, all the way down through southern Maine that way. And northern Maine is everything north of that. And the bass fishing rules and regulations north in the north zone is basically there's no limit, there's no length restrictions, and there's no bag limit.
Kill them all, basically.
In the southern zone, it's two fish, only one can be over 14 inches. And it was interesting because, you know, to see the salmon fishermen versus some of the guides that guide fishermen specifically for bass, and the two ne'er shall meet because the salmon fishing are convinced that the bass are bad for the salmon, and the guides that guide people on a regular basis say this is some of the best bass fishing in, you know, the East Coast. So it's hard to get a compromise there.
Yeah, and, you know, I've got quite a bit of personal experience with that growing up in Orno on the Penobscot River. And I have to say I am biased, but I think the Penobscot River probably has the best smallmouth bass fishery on the East Coast for a river fishery for bass.
Yeah.
But then, you know, also being a trout and salmon fisherman, I totally see the other side too, and
I actually
it's really in the right place. I like to think about it like plants, like a weed is a plant that's growing in the wrong place.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the streams that have bass now don't offer an outstanding fishery for bass, and namely, you know, the streams like the Narragansett River,
mm-hmm.
Pleasant River down east.
Right.
You know, it's a shame that there's bass in those waters. They might be plentiful, but they're not going to grow to large sizes. They're not going to offer the same type of fishery that a bigger water body like the Penobscot River or, say, West Grand Lake mm-hmm. would provide, or Baskehegan Lake, which is, you know, one of the larger lakes that has outstanding bass right. fishing.
Well, I didn't mean to get you off on a tangent, and we could talk about this.
We could go for hours on that one. But
I did want to talk a little.
It's interesting that there's some legislation on that.
Yes. Yeah, and I don't know if it's going to go anywhere. It really didn't, but c'est la vie, right? That's why there's biologists that work for the state of Maine and the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife that have a handle on this and many years of experience. So,
right, correct.
I want to talk a little bit about the Maine Sporting Camp Association.
Yes, yeah. So I just recently started doing some work with the Maine Sporting Camp Association. Mm-hmm. And right off, I'm jumping into some legislative work with them, and I'm working with folks that have leases on state public lands. Okay. And the Sporting Camp Association has heard from its membership some concerns, which we hope to address with it, with a couple bills. One is LD 1218, which is a bill to provide a mechanism for leaseholders to appeal actions taken by the Bureau of Public Lands to an independent third party, be it an appeals office or an ombudsman.
Yes.
And, you know, it's to address really a complex situation that the Bureau's in, to try to balance historical uses with statutory rules and the conflicts that, you know, those two, they're not always in conflict, but when they are in conflict, you know, we'd like to have an avenue for leaseholders to go to other than the courts or the commissioner or the governor's office,
right?
To come to some sort of resolution.
And to be clear, these two bills are having their public hearing this Wednesday, April 5th at 1 p.m. in the Joint Standing Committee on Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry. And the companion bill is 1219, LD 1219. And I just want to read the summary of it. The bill would create a list of rights to which a holder of the lease or easement on public land managed by the Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry, or the Bureau of Parks and Lands is entitled. So,
right, right. So that bill is really to provide clarity on what leaseholders on public lands can do to maintain and improve their properties. And, you know, some of that is in rule now. Say if you're in unorganized territories and the LUPC rules, Chapter 10, and if you're in organized towns, you're dealing with a municipality and their planning board or Maine DEP. But there's also, again, the land manager, the public land manager,
right,
the Bureau of Parks and Lands has people that oversee and manage the leases.
And this one
again, to provide clarity on what those leaseholders can do.
Yeah, and I see this one is introduced by Senator Black of Franklin County and President Senator Troy Jackson of Aroostook.
Yep.
So, I mean, it has bipartisan support, and obviously it's very important to landowners, camp owners up on land that's managed by Bureau of Parks and Lands and those lands that are leased. So,
correct. Yeah, and, you know, I just want to point out that we all usually think of those as being in the northern or western or far eastern parts of the state, but there's public lands with leases that are even right in the Bangor area. For example, in Bradley, there's a large chunk of public land, and there are some leases on that chunk of land too, and that's, you know, organized territory. So, you know, the goal is to kind of address both all those scenarios.
And it seems to me that there was a period of time in recent history where a lot of these landowners, big landowners that had a lot of camps on a lake actually went through and sold those parcels to the camp owners. Am I correct on that?
There are some cases where that happened. That is okay. Correct.
And yeah. Are there still large areas of, and I'm focused primarily on camps just because that's the conversation that we're on right now, that are lease land and companies are still dealing with leases versus parceling them out to sell them as independent tracts of land?
There still are leases on private, large tracts of private land, but these bills are just to address the leases that are on public lands.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not
primarily
into the private land at all. This is all public land related.
And dealing with primarily the Bureau of Parks and Lands in Maine.
Correct.
Okay. Any preliminary thoughts or feelings?
It's funny. We've had a lot of conversations with camp leaseholders, and they've all been very interested in these bills, and they've all been positive towards these bills. And you know, I've talked to one leaseholder who's had nothing but good experience with the Bureau, mm-hmm. but he would still love to know that his grandchildren can enjoy the lease that he's held for 50 years with a similar level of expectations as he has. And then I've talked to folks at the other end of the spectrum where they've had experiences with the department where they couldn't, or the Bureau, where they couldn't get what they wanted to do to improve their properties approved, and they're frustrated.
Yeah. Now,
and kind of what we'd like to do is, you know, with these bills is, again, is give people a reasonable level of expectation that they'll be able to keep their leases, they'll be able to improve their properties, continue the use as it stands now. And another factor to consider is when there's, say, a land swap. So, you know, this has been happening more and more frequently in the last 40 years in Maine, where private lands have been swapped for public lands and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So, say, a chunk of land comes up that the Bureau would really like to get, and they have a piece that they could swap with a private landowner. Mm-hmm. Well, those leaseholders want to make sure that that's not going to affect their lease.
I see.
So that would be one of the things that LD 1219 could address.
Okay, so going from Bureau of Parks and Lands to a private ownership.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Or a different, you know, say a conservation group.
Right, that would not. Now, can they honor that lease, or are they obligated to, or?
I think some of that might be in the details of the leases themselves, but mm-hmm. again, you know, that these are the sort of things we want to try to provide clarity to the leaseholders on with these bills, where right now people are feeling they're not clear.
So
based on current rules.
If I'm listening tonight and I have a land that I'm leasing that's on Bureau of Parks and Lands property, what should I do? What are you advising?
So one thing you could do is make your voice heard. You know, I'm a big believer in the sausage making that goes into legislation. And if you have an interest, make your voice heard.
Yeah.
Our legislators are there to listen to their constituents, which for the most part are the people of the state of Maine. You know, I have great faith in the system as long as people communicate. You know, that's the key. So okay. They can go on to the website, MaineLegislature.org, testimony, and provide written testimony on this bill. And they could also go down to Augusta on April 5th and provide testimony.
Okay.
To the Committee Room for Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry. They can also just reach out to us, reach out to me, and I can help them with that process.
And what's a good contact for you, Dana, if somebody wanted to reach out to you? We'll get more information.
I'll give you my direct line. It's 207-215-4582.
4582?
Correct. Yep.
Okay.
And feel free to call me directly, and I will walk you through the process to provide your input. And, you know, we're just asking people to tell their stories. You don't have to be very technical. You don't have to be legally astute to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Just
convey the importance.
Convey what your feelings are, what your experience has been, and what you're interested in seeing going into these bills. We're in the early days on these bills, so you know there's a lot of work yet to go into them. But we want to, you know, also make sure that we're doing the best we can for those leaseholders.
All right, and we'll let everybody know again. Those LD numbers are 1218, 1219. Very important if, you know of anybody that has a lease or camp or anything on land that is managed by the Bureau of Parks and Lands. So, well, good. Dana, we're almost out of time. Before we get going, I know you do have your iron in other fires.
I've got it in a lot of fires. So one of the most exciting things we're doing now is I'm part of a podcast called the Moose Hunt Podcast.
Okay.
And you can find it anywhere you find podcasts. I mean, you know, I listen to it on Spotify. But we've been doing this for probably about 6 months, and we try to drop an episode about every 2 weeks. And it all came from sitting around at Moose Camp telling stories and a couple of the guides saying, you know, we should try to put this stuff down in writing or record this. And then somebody said, well, hey, how about a podcast? And, mm-hmm. you know, we really did not have an interest in commercializing any of it or, you know, having a big successful podcast, but we've been the response has been astounding. We've been downloaded in over 60 countries. We've got over 20,000 downloads.
That's fantastic.
And it's, you know, a bunch of people sitting around telling stories for the most part, and you know, the best ones are where we have no script, no agenda. We just sit down and chat about moose hunting and other things we're interested in. So,
well, good. And you're still
a great deal of fun
and still involved up north, from what I understand.
Oh yeah, yep. So yeah, I guide for Eagle Lake Sporting Camps for moose and bear, and I do some fishing guiding. I kind of do a little bit of everything.